Hiya, Wanju. Hello, welcome to another episode of The Curb. I'm Andrew F. Pierce, and this is the podcast where I bring you in-depth interviews with filmmakers, creatives, and curators of culture. This podcast is recorded in Boolu, Western Australia, sovereignty never ceded. Aussie band Kingswood are rock royalty, having played shows with AC/DC and The Hives, tearing down the roofs of Aussie venues in equal measure with their unique brand of raucous rock. In 2024, the band undertook a record-setting road trip across Australia with their Hometowns Tour, the longest ever music tour, encompassing 112 shows over 6 months, with everywhere from the outer regions of Western Australia to the sticky floors of Sydney getting a taste of their guitar licks and long hair. Knowing what a historical moment this would be for the band, Kingswood tapped emerging director Darcy Newton on the shoulder to shoot social media footage and share their journey on the road. That notion quickly fell by the wayside when Darcy realised there was something more at play here, with his trusty camera able to capture the highs and the lows of the band's journey, ultimately bringing forth the feature documentary, Claptrap. In the following interview, recorded ahead of the film's rollout in Australian cinemas, which kicks off with the premiere event at the Astor Theatre in Melbourne on Friday the 4th of April, and culminates with a Q&A screening at the Ritz Sydney on Friday the 11th of April, Darcy and producer Luca Catalano talk about how they came on board to shoot the film, what life was like on the bus with the band, and how Darcy captured some of Claptrap's more impactful moments, like a late-night boozy chat with a regional music icon, or a deep and meaningful chat between bandmates about the meaning of one of their songs. For all ticketing and event information, check out the show notes for further details. And additionally, if you want to find out more details about the work that we do on The Curb, then head over to thecurb.com.au. We are a completely independent and ad-free website that lives on the support of listeners and readers just like yourself. So for exclusive, unedited versions of interviews or early release reviews or anything like that, visit patreon.com/thecurbau, where you can support our work from as little as $1 a month. Right, here's a clip from Claptrap, followed by my chat with the director Darcy Newton and producer Luca Catalano.
He said that every moment of every day is a struggle except for the hour and a half we're on stage. It all goes away.
I'd love to start off the conversation about how the whole process for Claptrap came about, because I understand that you were tapped on the shoulder in some regard to say, hey, do you want to follow us for 6 months and track down what we're actually doing on this big, massive, history-defining tour?
Yeah, so the band reached out to me in late 2022, a few months before they were going on tour, because they wanted a young kid to bring on the road, like Almost Famous, because it was a tour and a bus. But that was mainly to make social media content, but then also a doco was on the cards. But knowing how complicated features are, Luca came into the project as the producer, and I just sort of went on the road to film everything, and then the film sort of came out of all of that.
And Luca, I mean, the involvement as a producer as well, I imagine that's, were you also filming too at the same time, or it was single camera, wasn't it, from what I understand?
No, yeah, all the filming was done by Darcy himself, but in terms of my my involvement in the film, Darcy reached out to me after he'd been approached by the band initially to sort of come on tour, and I think at that point what was on the cards was a short documentary, so a short film, probably something around 20 minutes is what the band had in mind initially. I think Darcy was aware that I'd done a few sort of more ambitious projects, some of which, you know, to varying degrees of success, I might add. So he reached out knowing that maybe I'd have some idea of the potential of what could be done with something like this, and that I'd be eager a new opportunity.
And Luke is the right pattern producer for this project, because we didn't have much money, and Luke is very frugal and ambitious and hardworking.
You're out on the road for 6 months, like you've got to somehow make a way while also following the band. Were you on the bus with them throughout the tour?
Yeah. I lived on the bus for 6 months, which was good fun. I had a lovely time. But I would say as well, the film is a very honest representation of my experience on the road, in the best and worst ways. But honestly, a very, very amazing experience. But it was, to an extent, in terms of the filmmaking, the going on the road was the easy part. Shooting all the time just became very natural. And a lot of the film sort of emerged once I got back and was working with Luca and the editors.
I imagine then as well, like, because I've talked to some filmmakers who have done similar things where they've followed an artist where they go on a tour and stuff, and some of them have shot on film and then they've had the decision of, gosh, how much film am I actually shooting? But you're shooting digital, so kind of the notion of what you're shooting is almost negligent because you're able to, I guess, upload the footage at the end of the day and stuff. So your decision process about what you actually capture, how did you determine what that would be?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yes, because it was digital, obviously I'm not running $100 every minute on 35mm or something. There was still a lot of data just because I did shoot a lot. I was also shooting for socials content I was making on the road, so I sort of wanted a broad brush of things. But
Darcy ended up shooting so much that we spent as much money on media, on storage for all the footage that we were shooting, money that we could have spent on film and shot, you know, something that could have become a film. But when Darcy came back from the road, the rushes that he gave to the editors stacked up to something like 700 hours.
Wow.
Yeah. Which included every gig and lots of interviews. But what ended up being in the film was, just because I shot so much, you know, say 3 hours a day of obdoc content, it ended up just being an obdoc.
You're both young. What kind of music films had you watched prior to doing this? And was there any kind of litmus of what you might actually do as a template or something like that? Or you just kind of going in blind and saying, let's just capture and find it in the edit?
Yeah. Well, I was very inspired as a director. I was very inspired by lots of music documentaries, and I could name a few, but honestly, Claptrap ended up being its own thing. Thematically, I would say it's related to Almost Famous and Spinal Tap, or a mix between those two films. But like what the film is very unique, which is exciting.
I think for us, a part of our excitement and intent behind the making of Claptrap, especially when we were in post-production, was I think the boredom of music documentaries that we'd sort of seen. Because obviously there are some fantastic ones that sort of like stick out, very genre-defining films. But in the space, it is mostly populated by, you know, puff pieces that are, you know, very creatively controlled by the stakeholders. They're not the films that we were sort of excited to make. And credit to Kingswood, because they, you know, they understand, I think they get where we were coming from. They started their careers pretty young. They've been young creatives who wanted to do stuff and who just wanted the, you know, the access and the ability to sort of do what they needed to do. And in terms, and creatively, they provided us the access and essentially said, do your thing. You're the filmmakers. This is yours. Mm-hmm. And what really excited me and Darcy was doing something that was not following something else as a template and sort of doing an unformulaic documentary.
I mean, that's what I've always appreciated about Kingswood, and they kind of touch on it in one of the discussions where they're talking about radio shows and stuff, where, you know, they're not like commercial radio music, but they're also not exactly Triple J. They're somewhere in between. They're kind of almost Double J-ish, but not really Double J. They exist in the ether of outside of all of that, but they have a massive following, you know, of course, the AC/DC stuff, and they have those kinds of things. And I've seen them live a couple of times, and they're always a delight to be able to see live. And it feels like you're meeting the band at the level that they need to be met at, which is, it's not exactly a music documentary. It's not exactly following friends on the road. And it's not like, you know, the making of a band or anything like that. It's striking a balance in between all of that, which is kind of what you talked about. But that meeting the band on their level, how important was that for you as director and producer to be able to do that?
Yeah, I think one thing that became clear once we started sort of filing through the 700 hours of footage was the band, all of them as people, were such interesting individuals with all of their own, you know, stories happening, and the music and the band almost became the context. And once we sort of were really, me personally, because I wasn't on the road in the footage, once I, you know, saw, once we started watching the footage, what really gripped me and made me sort of invested and sort of like had me on that level was the boys as individuals, for sure.
I mean, one of the scenes or the moments which I really like is when they're talking about the meaning of one of the songs, and it's almost, you can feel a conflict.
It's very Spinal Tap.
Yeah, right? But you can almost feel a conflict brewing, but they're so lovely and they're so nice that it's like the conflict's actually not there. It's just them really eager to talk about the actual meaning of it. Darcy, capturing that moment, you must know, like in the 700 hours of the footage you've captured, you must know that for moments like that, that you've got something that's really, really a gem of a scene that you'll be able to center in the film and showcase. Is that what you felt in the moment?
Yes, I'll be honest. I feel like as an individual, I'm very interested in a lot of things. So I feel like I read a lot of situations like that. And it took collaborating with better filmmakers than I, like Rex and Jay, the editors, for them to say, no, this, although lots of these things are interesting, this is actually the important moment that we need to hone in on. And you'd find that bickering Alex and Fergus while we're shooting a music video about how people's facial expressions could be because of the meaning of how the song was written 2 years ago goes on. It's almost the longest, one of the longest scenes in the film. It's just a random bickering moment.
But it's the moment that kind of builds up, and it shows you also like 112 shows that they did. So that's huge, and how you encompass that into like a 90-minute film, and the breadth of Australia, like squashing 6 months in and 112 shows into that gives you the weight then to make those very brief glimpses of some of the shows. Like, we don't need to see every single show, right? We just need to get the understanding of what it was like, and I think that's really clear. And that seems to be kind of the narrative through line, besides obviously following the band, but the narrative through line for the actual documentary itself is getting a glimpse of what regional Australia is like as well. And I know I've read a few comments as well of people saying this is a really great representation of regional Australia. And I'm curious about being able to capture that, because we don't often get to see or hear regional voices in this kind of way, especially in a music context, audience members going and catching their favorite band. Usually these are areas that are overlooked, that bands don't tend to either have the money or the ability to go and see. So being able to catch that on screen must be pretty important. What was that like for you?
Well, I'm a born and bred city boy from basically Melbourne's central business district, like, or the burbs, but like I grew up in the city. And I hadn't traveled Australia heaps. So this 6 month tour, as well as just being a crazy experience touring with the band, was certainly like a very great introduction to regional Australia, because, you know, of the 112 shows, 90 of them were not in a city or more, maybe 95. Regional Australians are extremely, extremely fun, extremely, extremely kind, and like just so loose and so keen to have a good time. And also to see, especially from a music context, and a part of the philosophy of the tour was to bring the show to them. And they're just so appreciative, and they're just like so down to chat and meet and Yeah, they're good people.
Yeah. I mean, it's a delight to be able to hear some of their stories as well. And forgive me, but I can't remember the gentleman's name, but the guy who's the older musician who's sitting there and they had the story and stuff. Like, again, that's another moment that feels like it's so you pinpoint in the moment that this is a really important part, especially you've got an older musician talking to younger musicians about the role of music and, well, why should I pay you $40? You should be paying me, that kind of stuff. What was that moment like? Especially, I know we start off that scene with your camera in his face and he's saying, "You single-eyed person, I don't want to speak to you." What was that moment like for you?
Recording it.
Yeah.
I don't really remember. We were really, really drunk. I think there were three empty bottles of whiskey on that table. And there are certainly moments where the camera just like moves away from him performing. But I'm happy that I recorded it. I think it was a 40-minute shot that I don't really remember shooting, that I didn't have the mic on for the first 20
Oh,
minutes.
wow.
So really, I'm just happy the microphone was on when we shot it. Sorry, I think that was somewhere near Foster. Really like North New South Wales, South Queensland, tropical, beautiful. It is a beautiful song though. That's just his original.
Yeah. I mean, again, those moments are just like lovely, and then getting to hear the crowd sing as well. But then we have the moment of the bus crashing, and, well, not crashing, but breaking down and things like that. So the inherent drama is already there too. But you're talking about getting brought on to do social media, and I'd love to hear about the kind of striking the balance of being brought on to kind of do social media stuff and then also, having a documentary come about for it. How did you manage to strike that balance?
Yeah, well, I tried. My whole life I've been a filmmaker. I've never liked social media. Still don't. Never really made social media content either. Not that Kingswood cared. They still wanted me on the road. I certainly tried to make social media content. And I made as much as I could. But I was mostly occupied with just filming them like eating and bickering to like sit down and make a TikTok. Like I don't think I ever did that. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you gotta have a certain mindset for it. I mean, gosh, social media does my head in. I have no way of, and I've run a website, and I'm supposed to be tapped into it. It's impossible. Luca, you're laughing as a producer. What's your mindset behind the whole social media thing as well?
I'm just glad that Darcy, I'm just glad that Darcy was filming the documentary the whole time. It was definitely something that was discussed as a part of the plan of Darcy being up there. That was a way for him to sort of earn his seat at the table, earn his spot on the bus. He has to sort of provide a little bit to the tour, which was, he's got a camera, he can edit, he can do promotional material to sort of help the tour go along as it was so long. And I'm fairly certain there was next to nothing done.
Oh,
But that was the
there were
there
some
was
weeks
some
that were better than others.
yeah
Yeah, it was a reel or two a week, and exporting stills. But it certainly like I wasn't making a social media campaign as much as they would have
yeah
liked. Yeah.
but sorry, just circling back to the regional when we were talking about regional Australia and how its role plays in the film, one thing I wanted to mention was a big now that we're sort of a few years off, it's no longer sort of like present in everyone's mind, but when the band wanted to do this tour before the movie, forget Claptrap, when they wanted to go out into a bus and do the tour in the first place, they, like so many other musicians, had been really put in their asses by COVID. And what I think, and obviously COVID did so much damage to the music industry, and the impetus of the tour was to sort of was almost like philanthropic in what they sort of felt they were doing in terms of the in terms of going out to towns and pubs, RSLs, whatever, that aren't typically included in, you know, music tours that involve you know, the state capitals. And what I think happened in terms of the capturing of that in the, you know, the theme of the sort of like very archetypal newly renovated country pub is a real motif, I think. And I think it speaks to there's really specific nuances of musicianship in Australia, because we have this, centralization. We have like five cities where you can really play shows in this huge continent, as opposed to, you know, Europe and America, places that don't have the same, you know, centralization problems. It's, you know, being a musician in Australia, I feel like, the understanding I have, especially from making the movie, is it's like touring on hard mode. It's like you have, you know, a tiny amount of the population and only a few sort of venues that you can sort of pack in, and obviously in a specific point in time where everything's closing down and public liability insurance is going through the roof and inflation is, you know, it's too much and people are just saying, no, fuck it, let's not do this anymore.
I mean, that's the thing. It's a testament to musicians and the venues as well. Like, I know here in Perth, we've had a few of our major venues just close. And I know Melbourne and Sydney are exactly the same, where those kind of 100 person, you know, up to 500 person theatres and stuff are just closing and being lost. And it's an ode to culture and keeping it alive. And it's vitally important. But with that in mind, you're touring the film in some ways with some Q&As and things like that. What's your hopes and intentions for the screenings that are coming up?
I hope we can offset the fuel costs, mostly.
Honestly, I just really didn't have much to do in April, and I don't think Garthy does either. But I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and I think in terms of the work that everybody put into the film and what we were able to achieve with the resources, I think it's something that everyone's pretty happy with. That we think is a pretty, you know, fun product that we've been sort of lucky enough to have featured in a few cinemas along the East Coast. So I think we're just going to like ride the wave, pat ourselves on the back for a couple of weeks, and then probably get back to work.
I mean, it's a lot of fun. Like, we don't get enough of these music dockers. We have such great music history here in Australia that these feel like a rarity. So having a film like Claptrap come along, celebrating and honouring one of the great modern Aussie bands is a delight. So I, you know, hats off to you both. Thank you for what you've done and the work that you've done in creating and bring this to life. And I'm grateful that the band tapped you on the shoulder, Darcy, and said, hey, let's do this, because the end result is really good. Last question for you then both is music docs the kind of thing that you want to continue on doing, or what's your view? Where do you want to go as filmmakers?
I probably love music more than I love documentaries, to be honest. But really, I just, the focus is making film. Documentary is fantastic because when you have, there's a lot of infrastructure in place. There's more infrastructure in place to sort of help and support documentaries than scripted features. But also, it's a bit more achievable for the smaller team and less resources to make something of really good quality. And I think, I never thought of making documentaries before Claptrap, and now I sort of I see that being a very big part of what I do going forward. Part of the reason is because it is just so much more interesting and fun than I thought, but also it's at the moment I think the focus for me and Darcy both is to make good feature films. And at the moment, those are documentaries for sure.
Yeah. We want to make films, true cinema. But that's thankfully sort of the it's the thing that takes decades to do. So like we're just aiming for it.
Yeah.
We also want to make films that we want to make, which is, and I feel like sometimes, I think also with documentary, it's a bit easier to sort of go by the beat of your own drum. And I think that's, I think we've still got a few years of going by the beat of our own drum before we start, you know, selling out.
Yeah.
Can't wait.
Well, I mean, the money's going to be good when you do sell out, but I'm excited to see what you do when you're beating your own drum. Like, because that's, you know, if this is the proof, it's good.
Exactly.
Exactly. So on a selfish level, continue doing this for just a little bit longer, please.
Well, we've got more.
Good.
We're cooking.
Good. Darcy, Luca, it's been a delight to be able to talk with you both. Congratulations on the film. I hope the screenings go well and all this kind of stuff. And yeah, looking forward to seeing what you both bring forward in the future.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Thanks for listening to this chat with Darcy Newton and Luca Catalano about their film Claptrap, which hits the Astor Theatre in Melbourne on Friday the 4th of April and ends at the Ritz Sydney on Friday the 11th of April. All the details are in the show notes. For other interviews, visit thecurb.com.au. I'll see you on the next one.